You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Now, Jared is with us, the captain of the SEN commentary team. Jared, good evening.
Kane, hello. Hello, Jared.
Oh, it's been a procession.
It has. Australia sort of had to time their declaration there, and they were trying to play for the dual milestones after tea. Steve Smith and Travis Head went run for run on their way to 100 and 200. Smith got his 200, and the very next ball, Travis Head chopped on for 99 and didn't get through. So he got sawn off. Australia 4 declared for 598. And I think it's the first time in a decade there have been two double centuries in a score put together by the Australians. And that's a pretty rare feat through history. Only the 17th time that it's happened. Labuschagne 204, Smith 200 not out.
It was amazing, Jared. I was talking to Kane about this earlier, the synchronicity between both Labuschagne, who was trying to get his 200, and Smith trying to get his 100. They were almost on the same number, albeit 100 runs apart. And then exactly the same thing happened with Smith and Head. 199, 99, 94, 194, etc. It doubled up through the day. It was incredible.
Yeah, it's so sometimes cricket is a game of patterns and numbers. And I think you and I love a good set of numbers,
yeah.
Jared. So it's just about a perfect set of numbers, but not to be. It's the fact that Smith and Head were going to get there in consecutive balls, and it didn't eventuate. I did sort of think, you know, man plans and the cricket gods laugh. So, yeah, Australia didn't quite get what they were after there, but my goodness, did they shovel some dirt into the West Indies grave along the way.
One bloke who would not be laughing is David Warner, who played the most extraordinarily poor shot for him. I mean, that would have been a loose shot in a T20. He's left a 200 out there.
Yeah, he's left a score out there, no doubt. So the team's ended up batting for 153 overs and only lost the 4 wickets. And Warner was out in the 4th over. So big booming drive he was looking for and dragged it off the inside edge, lost his leg stump. He's an interesting study for me, Warner. He's announced his ambition to work his way through to the end of the Winter Ashes. So that's 15 test matches. But the law of diminished returns of the ageing cricketer, the ageing athlete, is he is in that phase. And there's a legitimate question around his eye and his reflexes, I think, in test cricket, which only he can answer. He will be, of course, in some sort of demise from here. How rapid that is, how he manages it, what the selector's role in that would be, knowing that there's such tricky tours coming as he's never had a great time of it in India, and he was a walking wicket last time Australia played in England. So there's an element of risk about him regardless, as he would like a good bank of runs behind him. It is a summer of celebration for him. He'll play his 100th test match on Boxing Day, and he would love some runs to show for it along the way. I think he'll need some runs to show for it along the way, and I think he would be looking at this thinking he missed a soft kill.
Oh, definitely.
It's amazing just to Google his age and find out that he's 36. So that's sort of snuck up on us, which has been, and that's the extraordinary thing about Smith's form, Jared, because he was, you know, prolific, wasn't he, for so long, and then had the bit of a decline. You felt like the opposition had worked him out tactically. So his return to form this summer has been extraordinary. And to hear you say in the commentary, it's the best of the 200s that you've seen is a pretty strong endorsement.
I reckon it's the most elegant, I reckon. So he was always a homespun batsman with the technique that he invented for himself across the leg stump. And it was a bit ungainly, and it certainly wasn't classical, and it would never be taught. Now he has made his own adjustments within his game, and he looks much more orthodox. It opens up more strokes to him and more attractive strokes, like the cover drive, which he'd largely lost from his game because of his positioning. That's been back, as you could see it in that one day in Adelaide. He spoke about it, so he forecasted for himself, and then he's delivered against that. So he did have that period where every time he walked out into the middle, he looked like he was going to make 100. He was rightly being hailed as the best since Bradman. Then, yes, the world's bowlers tried to find a way, and they dried him up with the short bowling down the leg side, and now he's found a different way, and that's what batting mastery is about. I think he's in for
I just think he's in for a hell of a summer. The West Indies are clearly not going to threaten Australia through two tests. And while South Africa has some really nice fast bowling, if Smith is in this sort of form, he may very well put together a second phase. And we were debating before the test started about, around his place and things. So for a while, he was definitely the best since Bradman. And then he's back in that mix of Ponting and Greg Chappell, I think. As if he was to have this second surge across a few years here, I think he would clear out into daylight second.
I thought the questions that you put to the CEO of Cricket Australia, Nick Hockley, before the start of day two today were really important ones, and they centred around the approval rating or the love from the Australian public of the cricket team, the love of the captain, Pat Cummins, and the role of politics and social causes that are mixing with this team currently. I didn't feel like he gave you the answer that you were looking for. There was a bit of politician spin around it. There was a lot of positivity that he had put on, and he mentioned a lot of milestones over the last couple of years that the team has achieved. Did you walk away feeling like you got the answers?
I think it's interesting that just the concession that they are, they're talking about it a lot. They're clearly looking into it and trying to understand the mood of the public in any environment at the moment, I think is really hard in modern life. And that spills over into sport, and it's really acute in cricket right now. I do think the laziest phrase in public discourse is go woke, go broke. And I think those who use it actually disqualify themselves from a meaningful role in such a debate. I don't think that's the reason that crowds are less than they might be. I think the attractiveness of the schedule plays a role in that, starting a test match on a Wednesday. Pat Cummins came to the captaincy, I think, as a chance to be a really significant leader and maybe, well, definitely the poster boy for a generation of cricket. He suffered a couple of bruises along the way. He was clearly bruised by the process that removed Justin Langer, which I think is Cricket Australia's fault. And then in some quarters, he has been bruised around his stance on climate change. I'm heartened that an Australian leader would be so forthright in his views on that. And I think there's a few politicians who could take their lead from our cricket captain. There are those who are bitterly opposed. I think they represent a noisy minority, but they are a section of the cricket-loving community, evidently. The team takes a knee to support the West Indies, which I think is entirely appropriate, but that is drawn as causing some offence as well. So the team lives a different set of values, and they're prepared to do it publicly, and they're prepared to do it in the face of a firestorm of debate, because that's where they are under Cummins' leadership. I really like it. I think that makes them a thoroughly modern team with a really interesting leader, but it will be done with a level of opposition along the way.
I thought his response to the Justin Langer furore was really significant. And whether you're, you know, with him or against him and his political stance is irrelevant. I just thought his strength came through, and I thought that was really important for him.
Yeah, so he stands for his team just so well, and he doesn't shirk it either. As I think the biggest statement that he's made as captain so far was to tell the ex-players that they could stand up for his mates, but he was going to stand for his. And I think the dressing room, if there was a way to take command and to unify a dressing room, that was a really strong way to do it last summer. And he didn't shirk, I didn't think, in his press conference leading into this test match either, that this was what the team needed. They looked like I know they were so well prepared under Andrew McDonald's leadership in Pakistan for the mission that they took on there. And they look really well set for this summer ahead. They blew the World Cup, so that stood as a blemish against them, and they have to wear that as well. So I think he's a fascinating figure and will be for a decade to come, and not just for the fact that he's a fast bowler, but that he's just, you know, he might have the pretty boy face and the million-dollar smile, but there is a resolve that is unflinching, and he doesn't shirk any questions. He's prepared to tell you precisely what he thinks.
The scheduling, what did Hockley think or say or justify the scheduling? Because clearly, I think the crowds are reflective of the interest. It may be okay on TV, but there's not a lot else to do sometimes. You go home and you either watch the tennis or the cricket, depending on what your flavour choices are. But do you think that we'll get a quantum shift? Because evidently it's been backed up because of COVID.
Yeah, so this is a it's an awkwardly timed test match to start on a Wednesday. I don't really understand why it didn't start on a Thursday. That was sort of waved away as just being at the mercy of difficult international cricket scheduling. But why it couldn't have been slid by one day and then Adelaide starts on the Friday. And it does tighten up the time between the West Indies and the South African series. Maybe it's about the West Indies travel, perhaps. But I don't think that was adequately answered. What there hasn't been on the ground here in Perth is that campaign that the test is returning. After 2 years without test cricket, the Australian team back at Optus Stadium, there wasn't that ground campaign that would really raise public awareness and excitement. And maybe that's just a reflection as they didn't have a great deal of confidence in the product they were selling. And frankly, after five sessions, they're right, as this is going to be an uncompetitive test match against the West Indies. So could you have done better? I don't know. Wednesday's not in school holidays is 10,900. Really not that bad a crowd. And I don't know whether it sees Saturday, to be honest. And if it does, it probably only limps into Saturday, so you're not going to get a big crowd there. So the weekend's been sacrificed. I suspect this is around timing. There's a longer-term issue, and we know what the Big Bash has done, but are these test matches prior to school holidays, are they wasted a little? It's fine when they're a part of a five-test series, and the rituals of life that begin in Brisbane at the start of an Ashes, for instance. I think these two that hang on their own before school holidays hit, they would be better placed out the other side of Sydney in the old schedule where we used to play through to an Australia Day test in Adelaide. I think that would get you better crowds, but that comes with difficulties around whether international teams are prepared to be here at this stage and then how it fits against the cash cow, the BBL. And I don't think anyone's got adequate answers about that just yet.
My mind's got a blank space because of COVID, Jared, but take me back to 2017, 2018, 2019. Weren't there debates about the future of the West Australian test back then because of a lack of crowds?
So the WACA became it was such an inhospitable venue. So there's a certain charm around the WACA which is recounted. As long as you weren't sitting in the sun in 38-degree heat and there was no shelter at the ground. So they were always going to move test cricket to the new stadium when that happened. And it is, there's no doubt, it's a better comfort experience. Now, the cricket purists might argue it's not as good a cricket experience, but the 10,000 at the WACA would have been okay. Yeah. You know, 14 or 15,000 there would have been about right. The first day of test cricket here against India had 20,000 in, and there was something similar to that in the first day of the pink ball test against New Zealand. So this is half the crowd that really they would be expecting for a feature test match, but the West Indies don't represent that at the moment, unfortunately, and they're due here again next summer, which is a real pity.
Jared, we'll let you get back behind the microphone. We appreciate your time and have loved the coverage on SEN.
It's great to talk to you both. Go well.